Chapter 6. Organizational F-Ups. We all know the mantra, your team matters most. Your team members are the building blocks of any startup, the Lego you build your dream with. I'm not only a fan of great teams, but also of Lego. As a kid, Christmas was, for me, the yearly chance for a new fantastic Lego set. Today, my kids have almost outgrown the plastic blocks, but even after they do, we will still have some of the original, now vintage, toys they made from when Lego started as a wooden toy manufacturer. I've also had the pleasure of having Lego as a client over many years, which has always been exciting on many different levels. I'd go so far as to say that their only failure remains mine when a loose piece finds its way into the bottom of my foot in the dark. Although it should be stressed that this was not a direct failure of their own making, Lego has also been associated with less impressive situations. Let's take a look at Mindscape, the developer of the 1997 Lego video game Lego Island. The fantastic team developing the game worked on it for 2 years before release and had even begun working on the underwater sequel when Mindscape fired the whole team and sold off the business. It's believed the company didn't want to pay out the huge bonuses and royalties that were contracted for a successful game to the team that had created it. Ditching the team seemed like the best way to save cash. Once they continued operations under the new management group after selling itself, Mindscape didn't win the contract for Lego Island 2 or any other project. Without the original team on board, their most valuable assets were gone. So, does the team matter most? Is this philosophy exaggerated, overrated, a meaningless cliché? No, your business is really only as good as the team of people behind it. Let's take a closer look at the delightfully many ways you can go entirely wrong with your startup's organization, ending up in jail being one of the most extreme outcomes. Organizational F-Up Number 1. The flawed founding team. Surround yourself with people who are smart, hardworking, and fill in your deficits. The best teams are complementary in nature, rather than carbon copied. Two types of successful teams are traditionally found at startups. The first comprises skilled, young workers who can survive on a minimum of cash and dedicate 15 hours a day to develop the business for however long it takes. These kids are content to live on ramen noodles and Coke Zero to stay alive until you're up and running. The second type of startup team is just the opposite. They're mostly older, more experienced, and have probably left well-paying jobs to join your venture. You're likely able to raise more funding if you've assembled this type of team. And thanks to their combined experience, your startup's chances of survival are probably greater than they would be with a younger, less experienced, less expensive team. Of course, there are pros and cons to each of these team-building approaches. Which is right for you? It comes down to your funding and the particular needs of your company. One startup that picked a too experienced and expensive team was Vitoto. Founded in 2002, Vitoto was a collaborative video app for mobile phones. After raising some seed capital, they built their MVP, relocated to San Francisco, and launched their product. So far, so good. Except for the fact that their team was outsized for their needs and budget. Most of its members were at the stage in life where they had kids, nice cars, and hefty mortgages. No all-nighters and ramen dinners for them. They probably didn't even drink Coke Zero. This was a massive shame because Vitoto didn't need such heavy hitters. For them, a tenacious and scrappy team of crackerjack coders and managers would have fit the bill perfectly. They were making a fun video app, not the life-saving heart medication, after all. As it was, their senior team worked too methodically and drained the company of its resources before it even got a chance to compete in the marketplace. Long story short, Vitoto bit the dust. Whether you go with a green team or a seasoned one, it's essential to assemble a group of people with shared values and complementary strengths and weaknesses. This is especially critical with your founding team, who will most likely be allotted a significant amount of company stock. If that stock is owned by people who don't contribute significantly for the long haul, you're in for a rocky road ahead. Remember my plate-spinning debacle in Chapter 1? Well, here's the ugly truth of what trying to keep too many things going at once, mixed with the wrong co-founding team, can do to a person. And if you guessed it might land you in a padded cell, you're half right. This failure landed one of the founders in the clink. If you thought that founder was me, give yourself a high five and feel free to laugh at my expense. To accurately set the stage for this not-quite-made-for-television story, let me take you back to 1997. Back when gas was $1.22 a gallon in the U.S., and scientists were busy cloning Dolly the sheep. Perhaps less notably, on a worldwide stage, I partnered up with a guy to start my very first business. We sold digital products to e-commerce. Yes, just 2 years after a startup called Amazon started, so most of our customers took credit card numbers by phone and web shops. Nothing super fancy, but exciting to us nonetheless. Fast forward approximately 5 years. Picture the night before my girlfriend's 30th birthday party. I was 25 years old, the founder of two businesses, and starting up a third. At around 1 a.m., just as we were going to bed, there was a knock on our apartment door. I opened it to find two police officers, who politely informed me that I was under arrest. I remained calm, probably because my girlfriend, who was racing around the house, tearing apart every drawer in a frantic search for my lawyer's phone number, was doing enough freaking out for the two of us. The police declined to tell me why I was being arrested, flashed a warrant, and said that the charges against me would be clarified once we got to the jail. However, they allowed me to pack my laptop and change into a suit. I thought it might help me get out of whatever mess I'd gotten myself into if I looked more presentable than my pajamas. I also brought my wallet with around $100 in it. Arriving at the jail, I turned over my laptop, wallet, and everything else to the clerk. After a restless night in my rubberized jail cell, which wasn't all that bad, it being a Danish jail, I was led to a courtroom to hear the charges against me. Lo and behold, I owed thousands of Danish kroner, about the equivalent of $10,000 in unpaid business taxes. Without my knowledge, they had already gathered most of this amount by withholding tax refunds, but there was still a small balance and a fine left to pay. All of this was news to me, as I'd left the finances of the company that owed the money in the hands of my business partner, and actually thought we had closed the company years ago. He was, and still is, a great guy. But apparently his administrative skills were even worse than mine at the time. In a small plot twist, my then-current CFO had actually taken care of the matter. Great hiring on my part. As it turned out, the Danish tax authorities had actually made a mistake. I was then able to prove my innocence within 15 minutes. The tables had turned. Instead, they canceled the fine and owed me all the money they had taken, well over $9,000. While I never got an apology or the $100 that had been in my wallet, which had mysteriously disappeared since I handed it over to the clerk at the police station, this brief stint in jail taught me one of the most valuable lessons I've learned in startups to date. Your founding team makes all the difference in the world if you plan to succeed. Long story short, I understood how critical each founder's focus on their portion of the business was. No matter how great the team looks on paper, if each member can't contribute to a deficit another founder has, the team is destined to wind up in hot water, or on a cold prison bench. I'm not the first, nor will I be the last, founder to make the mistake of having a flawed founding team. Take Steve Blank, the CEO at Rocket Science Games. His founding team lost $35 million due to a business model that could not match the founding members' skills. The gaming company's executive staff included no gamers, nor did anyone have any gaming industry experience. Heck, not even one of the board members was an actual gamer. Mike Tukin is the current CEO of Talend, the open-source leader of integration software. Before his current leadership role, he was one of the founders of failed startup Paramark, a nascent technology space company. Tukin cites the failure of Paramark as an experience that taught him valuable lessons that have put his career on a successful trajectory. Through the failure, Tukin clearly identified strengths, weaknesses, and best practices that served him as he went on to the next startup. The first significant mistake Tukin pointed out was choosing the wrong co-founders. They didn't behave as a cohesive team, facing a massive amount of conflict, which led to sluggish decision-making. Next, Tukin didn't take the time to identify the gaps in the leadership team. For example, Tukin had never worked as a salesperson, so he wasn't adept at identifying the necessary talent and skills needed to make a successful sales team. His lesson was to admit knowledge gaps and weaknesses and ask for and find credible help. Tukin ended up hiring an advisor to help hire the right salespeople. Perhaps you've heard of Zirtual, an online company offering virtual assistance, to entrepreneurs and small business leaders, so they wouldn't have to hire a full-time employee. Within 5 years, Zirtual had grown to more than 500 ZAs on staff and operated in 39 of the 50 U.S. states. Within months of their fifth anniversary, they raised approximately $3.3 million in funding and brought in about $1 million each month. Sounds good, right? A month later, Zirtual laid off 400 employees overnight, by email. Charming and effective. A case clearly under what author, consultant, and speaker Christian Ørsted describes as lethal leadership in his best-selling book by the same name. I wish that Zirtual management had read it. CEO and co-founder Maren Kate cited burn, lack of checks and balances on the board, and a lack of financial knowledge in leadership as their reasoning for the major chop job. The leadership team had been dedicated to both the brand and the mission, but didn't understand how to scale the company properly. They grew too fast and had no one acting as the chief financial officer or the chief operating officer. The fix. Take stock early and often. If you have the vision of building a successful and sustainable company, selecting the right team is crucial. Make sure that everyone on your team is moving in the same direction. Having a team with different goals and objectives for the company means differing priorities and no solid order. Some companies exist where people act as if they were stranded alone on an island, therefore thinking solely of their personal goals, motivations, and expectations, rather than thinking of the people around them or their ideas. People in a team may play different roles and have different strengths, but if everyone does their job and makes sure they're available to support one another, the entire team will have a better chance of finding success. That applies to both individual teams and companies. No matter the role a person plays in the organization, if they are aligned with their peers on goals, the team will land a win. There are many mistakes to be made if you do not have clearly outlined responsibilities, direction, and key performance indicators that are measurable and tracked routinely. Without that roadmap in place, it's easy to waste time and money as everyone flounders around trying to wing it. Sadly, this lack of clear direction, also known as leadership, can cause a catastrophic failure. To help avoid failing not only yourself, but also your company, surround yourself with smart, talented people and give them ownership of their tasks and allow them to make mistakes. You can't succeed with your startup without hard work, like seriously hard work, and then some. Hard work in turn requires commitment, vision, and passion, but doesn't mean that you can't have fun. When you work hard and your team wins and achieves great things, it's the team that wins. Managers and coaches set the direction and rely on the team to implement it, but the best team relies on a collaborative approach. Teammates collaborate and exchange ideas. Successful teams look to their leadership in a supportive capacity to help circumvent major organizational obstacles. No matter what, a good team keeps their eyes on the final destination as they work together to identify, develop, and implement the best roadmap to arrive successfully. Work on flexibility. Your role is to set the overall objective and trust your team to execute. This does not mean not giving people autonomy to exercise themselves, but they must first fulfill their primary role. Once people understand their roles, their ability to cooperate and act improves significantly. Keep roles loose and flexible to encourage individual creative thought. Go to trade fairs and universities. Find people smarter than you, and then hire the talent that fits. You need to define the role that suits you and your team and the needs of the company. A big part of leadership is articulating your vision and communicating the result so that people can see, feel, and taste it. Victory requires cake, obviously. Imagine the bigger picture to spark passion and set and communicate clearly defined goals and milestones so that everyone in the company can feel like a winner when the company wins. If you are passionate about your idea and can articulate how things work, you will attract the best and brightest. A problem in many companies is that people feel disconnected from what is happening around them. Try to focus on meeting your team where they are, walking around and explaining to people how what they're doing is related to the bigger picture. The more you believe in yourself and have passion, and the more you buy into it, the more you are willing to do what it takes to win. There is a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity in every company, especially in a startup. Sometimes the plan needs to be adapted to the current real-time circumstances, sometimes not. Big companies start with a good team. Good coaches and managers know how to do it, and good players win the vision. Make sure you aim high and understand how your contributions fit into the overall picture. Let the best players work together toward a common goal, which is to win, and let them win together. Don't forget to celebrate milestones with your team along the way. Work hard and adapt when needed. Organizational F-up number 2, the missing co-founder. A team gains its strength from the people in it. If an integral part of the team goes missing, the entire organization suffers. Having a co-founder is essential. This partnership creates accountability, which helps you to avoid some of the pitfalls of being a single, charismatic leader. Plus, a co-founder will have skills that you don't have. I say this as someone who's launched multiple companies on my own before learning this lesson. I launched my first real companies, Shockwaved, Digital Entertainment Marketing, and Octane Hosting, without a co-founder because I wanted total control, honestly. I wanted to ensure that these companies, my brain children, stayed true to my vision. I worried about partnering with someone who would care less than I did and whose expectations might be lower. The fact is, most every company established by a single founder will suffer from the same fundamental handicap: the lack of accountability a single founder encounters in operating their startup. As the CEO and sole owner of Shockwaved, I had some ridiculously fantastic colleagues, but I didn't have a co-founder by my side, day in and day out, to challenge and support me. It was all too easy to let myself off the hook if I missed a deadline or failed to achieve one of my ambitious benchmarks. Once I'd fallen behind, getting myself up to speed again was almost impossible. Even when working around the clock, it was difficult to sustain the non-stop output a startup requires. Ready to meet another victim of the no co-founder failure? Let me introduce you to Melissa Tsang, the founder of QSOY, a restaurant finding site for diners seeking gluten and allergy-free meals. I actually believe that QSOY could have been a success. The business plan was solid. Tsang had identified a real pain point and tapped into an avid and receptive user demographic. And despite being self-admittedly non-technical, she successfully designed the site herself using WordPress templates. But QSOY also had some handicaps, like problems with funding and no clear revenue model. Most of all, Tsang was working solo without a co-founder. Tsang did actually try to find one by searching for a potential partner through meetup groups and several hacker and founder lunches. But she could not find a candidate who shared her values and vision and would also be willing to leave an established company to come to QSOY. Tsang spent 6 months working solo on QSOY, only to decide not to launch after all. Ultimately, Tsang recounted in a post-mortem on her blog I needed strong user growth numbers and concrete evidence before I would have leverage to use when talking to restaurants to advise and partner with QSOY. I couldn't get those numbers yet working by myself, especially with no team or funding. The once promising venture had proven overwhelming, both physically, mentally, and emotionally, according to Tsang. As she explained, without anyone else to keep me accountable or really caring about QSOY as much as I did, it was hard to deal with all my self-doubt and still persevere. The fix. Board up, partner up, or both. As QSOY's Melissa Tsang discovered, if you're a solo founder with a great idea, it can be challenging to find a partner who believes in your vision as much as you do and is willing to take on the risk of starting a new venture from scratch. Here are the top three tips I've assembled for finding a partner. 1. Write and commit to heart a job description for your ideal partner. 2. Network to find co-founders. 3. Look for a partner who complements your shortcomings. Be open to working with someone halfway around the world from a different geography and business culture. The point is that having a partner will increase your chance of success, so make it a priority. Organizational F-up number 3. Friends and family on board. The temptation to hire who you know may be strong when it comes to selecting your founding team, but there's something to be said about looking outside your circle of influence. The temptation to start your business with a friend, significant other, or family member can be enticing, but I promise you it's not all sunshine and rainbows. It's not to say it can't be done successfully, but there are enough cases where things ended badly to warn you off from it. I can say from personal experience that working with a significant other can cause additional stress. When my startup Shockwaved was bought, my girlfriend and I both wound up working for the same company. She had been there for a while in another division and had spent countless months turning her area around when I was acquired with my company. We had to work very hard to keep work at work. Unfortunately, we had many more work conversations at home than important conversations about our kids, groceries, bills, or anything other than work. It wasn't until she moved on from the company that things at home shifted back to normal. I've even hired friends from school to some of my startups and co-founded companies with others. We're still friends, but it's not the surest way to maintain those relationships. Domino's Pizza offers another example. Founded in 1960 by brothers Tom and James Monahan, they started the first store and bought a used 59 Volkswagen Beetle for making pizza deliveries. 8 months after taking over the initial pizzeria called Dominic's Pizza, James traded his 50% of the business to Tom for the delivery vehicle. Now, I truly believe that a Volkswagen Beetle has a charming design, but had James instead stuck around, his 50% share would today be worth half of the over $10 billion yearly the company brings in. Another fantastic family business failure comes by way of one of the most famous cereal companies. Dr. John Harvey Kellogg was a renowned anti-masturbation advocate in the U.S. He believed both sex and masturbation were bad for one's hygiene, mood, stiff joints, acne, epilepsy, and a whole host of other maladies. While working at the Michigan Battle Creek Sanatorium, he focused on healthy eating ideas to combat the desire to masturbate. His first invention, granola, led him to the discovery of a flaked bran cereal meant to be a healthy anti-masturbation tool. This was the invention of cornflakes. His brother Will also worked at the sanatorium as a bookkeeper. Will disagreed with his brother's mission, but did see potential for a ready-to-eat breakfast item. Together, they founded the Kellogg Company. On all accounts, the brothers coexisted in a constant state of feuding for decades. Back to couples who start business relationships. If the staggering divorce statistics are something that might scare you away from marriage, add to it the failure rate of new businesses. With a 90% potential failure rate, the stress and angst of running a startup tends to bleed into other areas of one's life, including personal relationships. When your partner at work is the same as your partner at home, the line between work and home disappears, and the stress increases tenfold. Studies show married business partners have a greater likelihood of experiencing divorce and a failed company. The fix: don't mix business with pleasure. Sure, it's a twist on the cliché we've all heard 1,003 times, but it's true. Mixing business with pleasure can be detrimental. The social conventions of relationships in business versus personal relationships sit at opposite sides of the scale. The best thing you can do when looking to find co-founders for your business is to ask friends for recommendations and not ask them to join you. Think of it this way. If out at dinner, would you ask your friend to recommend a bottle of wine or to make one with you? Friends who understand the startup life and all it brings are great commodities and should be valued. I have several friends who are founders, most of them, it seems, these days. And we can discuss a ton of things, like which direction to go, product design, how the new sales guy is performing, and so on, with no strain on our relationship. We will never have any goal dissension, power struggle, or conflicting financial interest. They can be great resources for information, support, feedback, and commiseration. And no matter how much you like hanging out with them, the bleed of personal relationships will usually overshadow the business's needs at some point in ways that hurt and hinder the company, and likely the relationship you had at the beginning. Organizational F-up number 4. Rush to the altar. Selecting the wrong co-founder, or co-founders, is worse than having none. And it's one of the most costly decisions in any business. Get it wrong and spend forever trying to correct it. Suppose every business is only as good as the team of people behind it, and that team starts with the company founders. In that case, it follows that the single most important relationship in your business will be the one between you and your co-founder. This partnership will ultimately be like a marriage, and it shouldn't be entered into lightly. How are you supposed to choose the person with whom you'll be spending so many hours of your precious life? You need to do some dating. Just as you would in your romantic life, you need to carefully vet your prospects, get to know them well, and refuse to rush into anything. Tell your potential business partner how you deal with conflict and ask them how they deal with it. Do they yell when they get angry? Retreat into themselves and give the cold shoulder? Whatever their way of coping with stress and conflict, it can be all right as long as you can build a structure that compensates for it. Focus on providing an outlet for you and your partner, or partners if you're in a multiple co-founder situation, to keep the lines of communication open at all times, through thick and thin, the good times and the bad. When dating your prospective partner, you'll want to learn as much as possible about their work ethic. How do they work? How hard do they work? Are they insightful? Are they skilled? All of those things are important in terms of ensuring that you get the right founding partner match. It's also important to explore your common interests outside of work. Think of co-founder matching like a dating profile. You want to be different enough to complement one another with your working styles, but you need some common interests to discuss over dinner. These relationships are long-term, so make sure you know who you are sharing your company with. Make sure you can stand the way they chew their food and what team they cheer for. Okay, so one of those is more important with dating than co-founding, but I'll leave it to you to decide. Once you've gotten to know your co-founder personally, it's time to start negotiating and documenting your roles, including who's the CEO. No matter how equal you feel, there can be only one decision maker. Asking the difficult questions is essential before agreeing on roles and responsibilities. You'll also want to sit down and iron out the major milestones and the key performance indicators, KPIs, you'll diligently monitor for the business. This should determine whether you have a shared business vision or not. If not, Cut your losses and find another co-founder. If you can't agree on the company's principal goals, it will only get harder to agree on decisions as you go. The fix. Go slow. Admittedly, this advice works for both business and relationships, but I digress. Any business partnership is as precious as a marriage and has to have elements of compromise, good communication, and open-mindedness to be more successful and lasting. Without really knowing the person you're getting into business with, you're liable to learn they aren't the person you thought they were. Taking the time to really get to know potential partners and vet their business, and in some cases, personal history, can give you a more well-rounded view of who they are, how they work, and what to expect concerning their leadership style, work ethic, strengths, weaknesses, and so much more. In keeping with our marriage analogy, I'm sure you have heard divorce horror stories from friends, family, or unfortunate personal experience. Everything is a fight. Anyone caught in the middle is affected by the tension and infighting, and any semblance of trust and harmony disappears. Imagine that in your company, that kind of strife causes multiple failure points and often leads to epic dumpster fire BBQs. Getting married is far too important to rush the process. Besides, getting divorced takes at least 10 times longer, so take your time with it. There is no rush to find the perfect partner for your business venture. Take it slow, give it the time it deserves to respect the importance of the decision, and trust your gut. This partnership should be ready to stand the test of time and the stress of a startup. Organizational F-up number 5. Hiring freeze. Not hiring can backfire. Startups often struggle with knowing when and who to hire and are reluctant to take the next step. Avoiding hiring has dire consequences. Hiring too quickly is fatal from a financial perspective, as we learned in Chapter 4, where we discussed funding failures. But not hiring is also a huge problem. I don't subscribe to that cliché advice to hire slow, fire fast. The first part of it, but I'll talk about firing later in this chapter. At least not any more than I listen to entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs who extol the virtues of big data, growth hacking, oops, synergy, and insert buzzy startup world trend here. Sure, it is possible to start a successful small company with zero employees, but that success will likely come sooner if you propel the business forward by bringing at least one employee on board as quickly as possible. Up your stakes and bring someone on as soon as you can afford to do so. With someone else on board, you'll be forced to set a firm start time for every workday. In giving them structure, you give yourself much-needed structure. Also, employees can bring a completely different angle to your company than founders can. Of course, founders have skin in the game, and that's important. But you get different perspectives from employees. With my company, Nature Energy, my partners and I would initially debate the smallest decisions endlessly. The three of us theorized and agonized for months over our pricing structure, positioning, and product market fit. We researched, ran endless numbers, and called up potential customers to ask them about price bonds. Much of this preparation was very useful, but it wasn't until we went out and hired two people that we really got the ball rolling at Nature Energy. Now, if we weren't efficient with our time, we were wasting their time too. And as we paid for their salary, that was nasty. The idea of paying employees to sit around and twiddle their thumbs while we got our acts together and gave them work to do was too painful for my partners and me to withstand. So we made sure there were prospects for them to call, process and software development tasks to manage, and customer interactions for them to handle. The fix. Hire when ready. As soon as you have the basic framework for your company in place, hire someone to do a component you can't do yourself. Having an employee you are accountable to will keep you moving forward and stop you from making excuses, letting deadlines slip, and so on. It focuses you and also adds more energy and new thoughts. At the very beginning, it's okay if you hire someone who won't be with you for the rest of the startup's life. This really isn't the worst thing that can happen. That said, don't rush the interviewing and hiring process itself. When done right, this process takes time. And it goes two ways. Research shows that carefully considered hires are more sticky than rushed hires. An employee who's been thoroughly vetted feels that they've earned a significant and competitive position. As a result, they invest more of their time and energy than employees who were hired quickly. On the other hand, employees hired quickly are likely to have a that-was-too-easy mindset. They tend to quit more easily, with average tenures lasting shorter compared with employees who undergo lengthy interview processes. Back in the 80s, Ellen Jakofsky, who used to be Associate Professor Emerita at Southern Methodist University's Cox School of Business, and others, actually concluded that up to 60% of undesirable turnover came down to poor hiring decisions. This is why, even if I know I've found the person I want for an open position, I still conduct a minimum of 3 interviews for the role. While doing so, I let my top choice know that they are one of the leading candidates. This way, I force myself to spend more time on the process, while ensuring that the candidate knows they're being cherry-picked, and not risk losing them in the process.